It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Good evening, film lovers. You are tuned into Film Sociology, a film talk show on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. The show is available as a podcast on WFYI.org. We have a blog for the show you can check out at filmsociology.tumblr.com. And if you haven't picked up on it by now, Matt Sosi is not here. He's on assignment this week. This is Kobe Slagle in my usual position here behind the board, and we have guests with us today from the Film Yap, from the Indianapolis Jewish Film Festival, and a man that needs no introduction, but has an introduction, Richard Probst.
It's me, dear friends, alive and kicking. Well, alive anyway.
I'll be kicking you with my jingle bells.
That's it. Kick the footless man.
You know, you walk into this stuff. Oh, you roll.
Yes! Yes! Awesome!
Well, when a fella comes back from the dead, I find that an occasion to stand up, be counted.
It's not a film sociology if I don't do a foot joke.
Well, I can see where it'd be difficult for a man of your stature to keep in touch with even half the people you know. Well, you know beautiful women, they encourage you one minute and cut the legs out from under you the next.
I'm not half the man I used to be.
Wow. Why is it that the guy in the wheelchair gets a film called The Sitter?
Richard Probst, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Rich, by the way, for not being a heel about these sort of things.
Ba-dum-bum-bum. Thank you. Oh, man. It makes me glad to be a footless man. Just think about it. If I had feet, I could not have that intro.
No.
It's a really kind of a...
We'd have something else. You know, we would have something else, but it would not be that.
On this Good Friday, it's good that I'm an amputee. Wow.
The bar was here, Rich. Yeah, it is now here.
Whoa. Did you warn Bob that we are a little irreverent here?
I sort of gathered that. And we're not reviewing The Left Foot today, are we?
We are not. Oh, I love that movie.
It was a good movie.
No. I promise I will be serious during your interview. This is Richard Probst.
Okay, serious.
I'm actually lying. You know that, don't you, Kobe?
It's all good.
I'll try to be serious. But no, this is Richard Probst. I'm with TheIndependentCritic.com. I am filling in for Matthew Sosi as he is off. I think he's partying somewhere, isn't he?
I really don't know. I said he's on assignment to give him some credibility, but I really have no idea
I think he's in Europe or just doing something weird. Actually, I think he is in the 12th night at Earlham College.
That sounds about right. Let's go that route.
Okay, so he will be back sometime after 12 nights,
I guess. Doing miscellaneous things in Richmond involving theater.
And
there
for
you
some
go.
Strange reason, trusted me with the show.
Yep.
So I'm not sure if he just doesn't care about the show anymore. I don't know.
Verdict's still out on that.
Joining me today, Sam Watermeyer will be joining me to talk about this week's releases. He is from the Film Yap and Nouveau News Weekly. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you very much. I'm scared now. You're a tough act to follow. I don't know how I can top any
Just
of
go
this.
Upstairs. I can't follow you. That's the answer.
Well done. Well played, sir.
Oh, and then joining me for the more serious side of film sociology will be Bob Epstein, who is the founder and executive producer of the Indianapolis Jewish Film Festival.
That's correct.
And we will be talking about the festival, which is coming up April 23rd to May 3rd.
That is also right.
Yes! I have done my research. Life is good.
Yes.
Beneath this comical facade, there's someone semi-serious.
And we have mostly serious films. We have some funny ones, too.
Do you?
Yeah.
Good, because I like funny.
Arranged is funny. Has some funny.
Is it?
Ones. Yeah.
Okay.
Lemon Tree is not.
The Lemon Tree does not sound.
No, it's pretty sour. But it's a great film.
Whoa. We will be talking about that more in just a little bit. So you are welcome to comment anytime you want during our irreverence, if you like, or if you've seen Furious 7, we invite your feedback.
I haven't seen it yet.
Because I'm disappointed that it's not in the festival this year.
Right. Well, it wouldn't be in keeping with this festival. Another one.
All right. So let's get started with...
That's the big one this week.
That is the big one. That's really the only wide release this week. And I believe we do have a trailer for it.
Yep. Let's take a listen.
The most important thing in life will always be the people right here, right now. That's what's real. Hello?
Dominic Toretto. You don't know me.
You're about to...
Who did this? Remember Earnshaw? This is his big bad brother. He's a special forces assassin. They created a monster. Looks like the sins of London have followed us home.
We're being hunted. Shaw lives in a world that doesn't play by your rules. Like it or not, you and your friends are a part of it now.
I don't have friends. I got family. This time it ain't just about being fast.
Can somebody just walk me through what we're supposed to be doing?
Yo, Roman, you need some fresh air?
Just when you didn't think it could get any better, huh?
Everybody get foolish.
We got mercenaries after us with enough weapons to wipe out small countries. This right here takes crazy to a whole nother level.
What's the plan, Don?
One last ride.
Nope, I'm not looking.
What's up now?
That is Furious 7, which, if you really care about the storyline, you probably don't want to go see anyway. I mean, let's be honest. It's not a film you go to see with a storyline. Probably the big reason to go see this film, and I think they're hoping that all of America really wants to see it since it had like a $250 million budget. So if all of America doesn't go, Universal Pictures is in trouble. But I think that they're looking at a pretty wide opening. Obviously, actor Paul Walker, who plays Brian and has been in the series from point one, was killed in a car accident during the filming of the film. And, as a result, that you kind of feel that in every cell of the film, I would say. I mean, not that it's actually on film anymore, but, so I don't think there's a cell anywhere.
Hmm.
But... It seems like the consensus has been, it does a fairly decent job at remembering Paul Walker without ever losing the things that fans of Furious 7 really like about it. I mean, basically, you have your typical storyline. You have a bad guy, Deckard Shaw, played by Jason Statham, who fits, I think, fairly nicely within the cast of the film. You know, I mean, this is not a film that you go to because you're going to get a lot of emotions. You're going to get a lot of action. You're going to get, you know, that underlying morality of the film, which is that family is everything. You know, and it may be a skewed morality, but, you know, it's there, and they're very serious about it, and they don't treat it as a joke. And I think that people, at least for me, people resonate with that. You know, it's got that really good-hearted side, but it's also got all the action that you really enjoy in a film.
Cool cars, cool stunts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it does it really well, and it's really amped up here. Jason Statham is a serious bad guy. He is the brother of the guy that they basically almost killed in the last film, and so he's out for revenge. He's out to kill them. They're out to stay alive, and that's basically the plot of the film.
You know, I had actually only seen the first Fast and Furious before this one.
Ah.
So it was exciting to see the Fast and Furious team take a leap into what's basically Mission Impossible territory with this one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of globe-trotting and, you know, fancy gadgets and cars. They also pursue, you know, the classic thriller kind of MacGuffin. They're looking for some sort of microchip that, you know, it's all very convoluted, but...
it's called God's Eye.
Yes. Yes, and it's hidden inside of this souped-up car that's held in a safe on top of a building in Abu Dhabi. It's all very James Bond-esque, and it's cool to see that leap from the first one, which is essentially just a street racing thriller, to this kind of larger-scale, globe-trotting kind of action adventure.
Super high-profile schemes and...
Right.
Bad guys. From the promo stuff here, it looks like Dwayne Johnson is now on the side of the good guys. Is that right?
He is on the side of the good guys. He is, kind of everybody has kind of become a family. I mean, and I think you get that feeling in the film, which is kind of what I like. It's kind of like one of the Ocean's films with a lot more action. I mean, they just have a tremendous chemistry. You know, they've been doing these films for a while now. They're comfortable with one another. You get the sense that they actually do care about one another. I mean, are you sitting there watching great cinema? No, you're not. You're not watching great cinema. Vin Diesel was quoted in an interview. I don't know if it was the world premiere, but he said that the film was going to win Best Picture. No, it's not. I'm here. Ben, if you're listening, no. Take medication, because that's not going to happen.
Are we
going to
be talking about it for the Razzies? Razzie voter Richard Probst?
No, I don't think we'll be talking about it. Yeah, exactly.
No.
No.
I mean, it's...
It's just there.
Yeah, it's not a bad movie. I really had a good time. And in terms of the family stuff, it really is surprisingly wholesome. A lot of cursing, lot of graphic violence.
There's a lot of violence, but it's not graphic.
Yeah, really not graphic or gory. It's pretty wholesome.
It really, I mean, it to me is at its heart an action film about family.
Yeah.
I mean, and I resonate with it. I like it. I consider it more of a guilty pleasure, but the pleasure is definitely there for me. I definitely enjoyed it. I don't know that it's even my favorite in the Furious films, but I also like how they handle Walker, which we certainly won't talk about here. But, or I won't. I guess I can't control Sam. I won't talk about.
Well, what's interesting is that his exit from the franchise actually does work within the context of the story. Furious 7, he is considering retiring from this kind of crazy life of, action and violence and focusing more on his family as opposed to his, car family, I guess you would
exactly
you would call them. So it's that focus on, you know, moving into a quieter domestic kind of existence.
It's just very nicely handled. It's a nice tribute to them. It's a nice tribute to the relationship they felt, you know, that they formed over the years. And so, I think that a lot of action films would have been, or filmmakers would have been tempted to take it a different direction. And I think that he really kept with the heart of the film. And I like that. I think most fans of the series are going to like how it closes out, even if it is a little waxing poetic and, you know, Ben doesn't quite sell the emotion of it. But it's still, you know, I liked it.
There you go.
That's it.
And
I
you
like
can,
it.
Yeah. You don't have to dislike these sort of things.
You don't. It's okay to sometimes just go to a film, have a good time. You know, it's a, you know, a amped up popcorn flick.
It's a good, what you're saying, it's a good way to spend 2 hours that you won't wish you had back.
Exactly.
There you go. What else we got this week?
All right. Sam, you saw something that triggered miles of fear, so I'm kind of anxious for you to talk about it.
Wow, yeah.
Sorry to bring it up for you on the air, but you
okay.
Know.
Well, I'm sure I'm. This will sound a little odd. I have a very for all of my life. I've had a very intense phobia of eels, and you'd think eels would be pretty easy to avoid, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
I actually had.
I mean,
to,
outside of sushi, unless you're traveling.
Yeah, exactly. I actually had to confront them much more these past couple weeks than I ever had in my whole life. I saw the film Secret Ocean 3D at the Indiana State Museum IMAX.
And you saw it in 3D?
Yes.
Yes.
And the children in the audience were mesmerized. They were giggling and grabbing at the eels on screen. I was looking through my fingers or down at the floor. And I actually had a chance to discuss this fear with the director of that movie, Jean-Michel Cousteau, who is, of course, the son of the great ocean explorer Jacques Cousteau. And that was an incredible experience. He stopped by the Nouveau office to talk about his underwater explorations and his work in terms of trying to save the ocean and open people's eyes to how it's being polluted. So I strongly recommend seeing Secret Ocean 3D. It's a very immersive experience. You'll practically feel like fish are brushing against your legs as you're watching.
Easy
it.
For you to say.
Yeah. Sam, did you see
the
Deep?
I walked right into that.
Did you see The Deep many years ago?
No, I've heard of it.
With Jacqueline Bisset, there's a scene in there with a moray eel.
Oh, I'll have to avoid that.
I don't think you want to avoid Jacqueline Bisset.
Now that was a good movie.
But
the eel comes after her.
Oh, I see. What Jean-Michel Cousteau told me is that eels open their mouths so widely to breathe, not to threaten. And I told him, I still feel very threatened. Yeah.
That's still terrifying.
Yeah. And but that was a very unique experience that, you know, you wouldn't. I never thought in my life I would be confronting that fear with an ocean explorer and having to face it on a huge screen.
Okay, so talk about the 3D a little bit outside the eels. 3D works? 3D's good?
Yeah, definitely. Looks good. There's an incredible sequence with an octopus. You know, my problem with 3D a lot of the time is it's a little too subtle. I kind of want things to jump out at me.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie definitely fulfills that. Cool. Like I said, the fish just kind of seem like they're coming at you. And it's really exciting. It's only 40 minutes. It's the kind of thing. It's even more fun for the whole family than Furious 7. A little more educational.
Unless
as
their
well.
Children have a fear of eels.
Yeah, well, I mean.
In that case, it's a horror film.
Yeah, exactly. I used a picture of an eel for my article about Cousteau, but I don't think I'll really try that much harder to confront this fear. Because, like I said, eels are usually pretty easy to avoid. Yeah. Not really sure I have to get over that, but.
Now that was a good movie.
They don't have feet. That's what I like about eels. Except for the band. They have feet.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
Excellent band.
All right. So you have three choices, and that's still at IMAX.
Yeah, that'll be there through the summer.
All right. So you can check out Furious 7. You can check out Secret Oceans 3D, and then Also, you might want to check out Danny Collins, which is Al Pacino's new film. It's opening at Keystone Arts Cinema. It is a great little film that's been getting a lot of buzz, written and directed by Dan Fogelman, who's written a lot of films but had never directed before. It stars Al Pacino as an aging 70s rocker who has kind of lived the 70s rocker lifestyle and is really happy doing that, but kind of reaches this point where he gets a letter from his manager, who's played by Christopher Plummer, who can do no wrong cinematically. And the letter is a 40-year-old letter from John Lennon, basically urging him to not sell out his talent. And it makes him take a second look at the life that he's living. And while it might sound like it could be cliched, I think it's some of Pacino's best work in quite some time. I just think it's a great performance. You've also got Annette Bening in here, who's wonderful. Jennifer Garner, who for me always adds a warmth to almost everything that she does. It's a little gem of a film. It's actually inspired by the true story of a folk singer named Steve Tilston. And I don't know. If you're in the mood for a very nice, very simple, heartwarming story, go check that one out. I think that you will definitely enjoy it.
Yes,
all right, there's
yes,
really
yes,
not much
yes,
on DVD
yes.
this week. It's a, kind of a... I don't know if Benedict Cumberbatch is just that intimidating. I never really looked at him, except that I've heard that somebody just made like a 500... What was it? A 500-pound chocolate Benedict?
What?
For Easter? They made like a life-size chocolate Benedict Cumberbatch. Kobe's looking at me like, you must be lying to me. And as much as, yes, I would. No, I'm not. Yes, I would go for the humor if I could. But no, it's The Imitation Game, which was an Oscar nominee for Best Picture, is out on DVD and Blu-ray this week. It's the true story of Alan Turing, who broke the Enigma code and kind of paid a pretty major price for that with a country that wasn't quite ready to accept his homosexuality, ended up being castrated. Really powerful performance by Benedict Cumberbatch, who was also nominated for an Oscar, along with, I can't remember who.
Keira Knightley.
Thank you, Keira Knightley, who had an Oscar nomination.
We got the trailer. Want to take a listen?
Yeah,
cool.
Let's do that.
Here we go.
This war, we're not winning it. If you speak a word of what I'm about to show you, you will be executed for high treason.
It's beautiful. It's the greatest encryption device in history, and the Germans use it for all communications.
Everyone thinks Enigma is unbreakable.
Let me try, and we'll know for sure.
Mr. Turing, do you know how many died because of it?
I don't.
Three, while we've been having this conversation.
Gentlemen, meet Mr. Turing.
We need to work together, then. I'm afraid these men would only slow me down.
Popular at school, were you?
We're short on staff.
We get more staff, then. You have 6 minutes to complete the task.
Is it even possible? No, it takes me 8. 5 minutes and 34 seconds.
You said to do it in under 6. What is it that we're really doing?
We're going to break an unbreakable Nazi code and win the war.
Oh.
You know, to pull off this irascible genius routine, one actually has to be a genius. I'm designing a machine that will allow us to break every message, every day, instantly.
You're going to need all the help you can get, and they are not going to help you if they do not like you.
Have you decrypted a single German message?
You will
never understand the importance of what I am creating here.
Our patience has expired.
No!
If you fire Alan, well, then you'll have to fire me.
Me too.
And me.
It better bloody work.
Alan, you do not have to do this alone.
What are you doing? What's going on?
The Navy thinks that one of us is a Soviet spy.
You've got more secrets than the best of them.
What if I don't fancy her in that way?
Can't tell anyone, Alan. It's illegal.
I'm just a mathematician.
Sometimes it is the people who no one imagines anything of who do the things that no one can imagine.
Oh,
All right, that was The Imitation Game. And, you know, if you had asked me early on in the Oscar season, I would have considered it one of the favorites. I really enjoyed the film.
It's kind of the definition of Oscar bait.
Exactly.
You know, it's a historical drama. Now it actually has shades of socio-political relevance in terms of, you know, Alan Turing's adversity as a gay man, kind of reflecting what's going on.
He spent years hiding it, and then yeah. It got discovered long after he had basically, you know, in many ways, turned the tide of the war. And it's tragic to, you know, basically see that a nation turned on him in many ways.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of makes me angry, to be honest. You know, I mean, he you know, and to watch Benedict Cumberbatch play that out, I mean, I thought it was a tremendous performance. I think it was so understated and so in tune. In some ways, I would have compared it to a Meryl Streep performance, because sometimes she is so good that you don't realize she's acting. And for me, he was, I mean, some of the closing scenes I just thought were amazing. The DVD and the Blu-ray, yeah. There's not a lot of extras on them. So, you know, if you're hoping to go behind the scenes of The Imitation Game a whole lot, that's not going to happen as much. But, it, you know, for me, in terms of getting a high-quality film, you know, it was definitely there. I don't think anybody really expected it to win the Best Picture, but I didn't hear too many people say it shouldn't have been nominated.
It's an interesting biopic. It's cool to see how his... you know, code-breaking work is kind of compared to his personal life in terms of, you know, his life as a gay man kind of being the one code he couldn't solve, so to speak. So I thought that was very poignant.
So definitely you want to check that out. If you are one of the Fast and Furious fans and have a desire to catch up, now that you really need to do that to, you know, watch Furious 7, you know, there is a box set of Fast and Furious 1 through 6 that got released this week. You can certainly pick that up. And it does have quite a few extras on it and is a blast to watch. And it's really kind of fun to watch the, kind of the arc of how it's grown over the course of the, you know, now 7 films. And there's already pretty much a hint that there's going to be an 8. So I would be surprised if there's not
really
an 8.
There's going to be an 8?
There's going to be an 8. There's not going to be a Paul Walker 8, but...
I kind of had the assumption that 7 was going
to
be it.
I think that, you know, I saw several references to it being the last ride, but...
I hope it is the last ride, because it ends on such a poignant note with such a... sensitive tribute to Paul Walker.
I would like, it's a great place to end it.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be nice. I think anything else is going to feel like a money grab, but with a $250 million film, you know, you kind of got to grab a little bit of money. You know, how did they go anywhere from here? So anyway, that's pretty much it for the DVDs this week.
I think so. I don't know if it's worth mentioning Wild Card. The Jason Statham action vehicle.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Which was actually written by William Goldman, who, of course, wrote Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. And it kind of...
Oh, wow.
So yeah, he's fallen on hard times.
Apparently. It would have been a great project for Paul Newman in the 70s because Jason Statham plays kind of a hustler and in the vein of... like Fast Eddie from The Color of Money, and would have been a great project for Paul Newman. I'm not so sure Jason Statham does.
Does
such
he
a great
show an
job.
Emotion yet? We should start an emotion watch for him.
Well, I mentioned
everybody be on the lookout.
He's gonna do it one day. He's gonna show an emotion. Okay,
he tries in this one. I mentioned in my review that what's great about Paul Newman is even when he's playing a tough guy, he shows a lot of vulnerability, and Jason Statham is you know, just a hard shell. He never really shows any kind of tender emotion. So no is the answer.
Oh, well, that's all right. He's still young. He'll get there.
We're going to be taking a break here in just a moment, but there's some other things going on around town this weekend at IU Cinema down in Bloomington. Tonight at 6:30, we have Just Another Notion, short films by Mike Henderson. Follow that up at 9:30 with The Salvation, foreign language drama from last year, a Western foreign language drama from last year. Saturday, April 4th at 3 o'clock in the City Lights film series from 1967, The Graduate. Follow that up at 6:30 with The Saddest Music in the World from 2003 and The Salvation again at 9:30. That's IU Cinema. And then Sunday, April 5th, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Revenge of the Green Dragons from 2014 and A Will for the Woods, documentary drama from last year at 6:30. And we'll catch up here briefly with our IMA film Summer Night Film Series bracket.
I was wondering about that all week.
Yeah. So for those that are just now joining us, haven't been with us maybe for the last 2 weeks, the Indianapolis Museum of Art is holding a, in keeping with the season and brackets, a 64-film tournament to determine the final four films of their Summer Night Film Series this year. The 64 films are broken up into regions. We have a classic region, a cult classic region, a thriller and suspense region, and a 1980s region. And we are down to the this is all done by decided by votes at the museum's website, and we are down to the Elite Eight. So in the classic for the final, and Bob, feel free to chime in on this too. Singing in the Rain against the Sting. Who do you got?
Singing in the Rain.
Sting.
Sting? Oh.
I'm gonna go with the Sting too.
Ah, yeah. Singing in the Rain all the way. Spinal Tap against Big Lebowski in the cult classic.
Ooh. Ooh, that's
Big Lebowski.
Yeah. Big Lebowski.
Lebowski. Okay, yeah. Thriller Suspense. Shining and the Usual Suspects.
Usual Suspects.
Mm-hmm.
Rich? I'd have to go with Shining myself.
Same?
The Shining.
And finally, 1980s, Ferris Bueller against the Princess Bride.
That's Bueller.
Bueller.
A resounding Bueller. We're going to take a short break. This is Film Sociology, a film talk show on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. When we come back, Bob Epstein from the Indianapolis Jewish Film Festival. Stay tuned.
Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
Oh, why do you always tell me to stand by? That's just...
I didn't even catch that.
That's just so...
Did not even catch
that's
that.
That's just so insensitive.
I'm sorry, Richard.
I thought WFYI was more sensitive than that. I don't know. Anyway, we are back. I am not Matthew Soucy. He is in Richmond this weekend performing in Twelfth Night and taking his wife's commandments is basically what that's about, since he is directing the show. So anyway, we are with Bob Epstein, and we are going to talk about something that I kind of feel guilty about because I didn't even know this existed last year, and I'm usually really good about it. So
you must be Jewish if you feel guilty.
Whoa. You may have an argument there.
That's full of luck.
We are talking about the second season of the Indianapolis Jewish Film Festival, and it is coming up April 23rd through May 3rd. And tell me about the Indianapolis Jewish Film Festival, Bob.
Well, we had a film selection committee to look at. We started out maybe with 200 films, and we narrowed it down to 20. And from those, we selected some old ones and some newish ones. As an example, we're kicking off on a film on April the 23rd called A Woman Called Golda, which was the last film starring Ingrid Bergman.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
It's a PBS film. It's quite long, 3 hours. We're going to have a break, and if people need to leave at intermission, we understand that. And that's at the Hayston Academy. It's a wonderful film, and it's unbelievable, the presentation of Ingrid as Golda Meir. It's also interesting that that is Israeli Independence Day, so it all ties together. The second film is The Chosen, another oldie. The story was written by Chaim Potok, and one of the stars is Robbie Benson, who is now on faculty in Bloomington. And there's still a chance he might come up, but he has had some ill health in the last couple years, so possibly he will not be here. The gala is on Sunday evening at the Central Public Library, and I would call that film, that event the Jewish wedding. We're starting out with a klezmer band first, and then typical Jewish wedding foods. We're going to have what's known as a marital canopy set up on stage. It's called a chuppah, where a rabbi and a cantor will be performing remarriages, and maybe someone will step up that wants to get married for the first time and have a free reception. So that'll take place on stage. And then we're showing another older film called Crossing Delancey, which takes place in the Lower East Side. It's a very good story. That's at the Central Public Library on a Sunday night. We then move to Killing Kastner, which is a somewhat of a controversial film. It was produced and written and directed by an Indianapolis native, Galen Ross, who went to Broad Ripple High School. And Galen is coming out from New York to help present that film. I think she'll be interviewed by quite a few members of the media beforehand. Mm-hmm. And that story is about Reza Kastner, who negotiated with Adolf Eichmann to free Jews during the Holocaust. So depending upon what your feeling is, he could either be considered a devil or a saint. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the debate and the underlying thesis of this rather serious film. We move on to another film that's going to be shown at Landmark, The Lemon Tree, which is about 3 years old. It actually had a wide viewing here in Indianapolis and elsewhere, but I thought it was important to show this now. It is very timely. It's a true story, and it what happened in this film, the Israeli defense minister builds a mansion on a lemon orchard on the West Bank, and the Secret Service in Israel decides that they have to turn they have to cut down the orchard in order to provide proper security for the defense minister. So there's a conflict between the woman that owns the orchard, and it goes all the way up to the Israeli Supreme Court. And I guess I will have to be quite honest about it. It is fairly critical of Israeli society, with certain exceptions. The defense minister's wife is a heroine, and the Palestinian lady comes out very well as well. So it's a controversial film. It'll upset some people in the Jewish community, but they should see it. It's well worth seeing. The next film is Above and Beyond, and that's a film that is being produced or is produced by Nancy Spielberg, the sister of Steven Spielberg, and she's coming out from California to help present that film. It is also a documentary about the formation of the Israeli Air Force. And what I didn't know until I saw the film was that many of the founders of the Israeli Air Force were veterans of the U.S. Air Force, who, after the Second World War was over, went to Israel and helped set up the Air Force and, in some cases, flew planes there. And we're trying to get an older gentleman from the Second World War that was active in the Jewish War Veterans here in Indianapolis to be presented. That that film is being shown at the Indiana History Center. The next film on our plate is The Jewish Cardinal. It's a relatively newish film also. It's a film about Cardinal Lustiger, who was born in Poland during the Holocaust, got out of Poland and moved to France, where he was adopted by a Roman Catholic family and became a priest and rose up in the, not only in the priesthood, but became the leading theologian in the French Catholic Church, but never gave up his Jewish roots, as you will see in the film. After the film, we will have a discussion led by Father Rick Ginther, who is the Archdiocese Ecclesiastesian, as well as two rabbis, Rabbi Spiegel and Rabbi Halpern, about Jewish-Catholic relations going back to Vatican II, the formation of it within Vatican II, which was in 1964. I was personally a delegate to the 20th anniversary of that at Notre Dame in 1984. It was a very interesting time for me. That particular papal bull was called Notre Etate, the state of our church. And so it should be a very interesting discussion. That film will be shown at Christian Theological Seminary. And the last two films will be back at Hastin Academy. The matinee is called The Bottle in the Gaza Sea. That is probably the best film for children, let's say 8 years to teenagers. It's about a little Jewish girl in Israel that throws a bottle in the sea, and it's picked up by a Palestinian in the Gaza Strip, and how the interrelationship between those two. And I won't go any further than to say it's a pleasant film. And the last one is Arranged, which is, again, a new film. Last year we showed a film called David. I don't know if anyone, Richard, did you see that, or Sam?
Without, I don't think so.
The story in David was about a Muslim boy in Brooklyn that ends up going to a Hebrew school. And it's a very positive ending. This story, Arranged, was made by the same group.
Ah, okay.
And it takes place in Brooklyn. And it's the story of a two teachers, one Muslim, one Orthodox Jewish, who are both having marriages arranged for themselves, and how they relate to one another and the problems that they have. So it's again, an interesting interfaith story of Muslims and Jews in Brooklyn. So that's the film Lowdown.
Mm-hmm.
We had over 1,000 people last year, and we were hoping to have many more than that this year. We're moving around to different venues, and we have soft seating at all of our venues, so it should be a really a good time for all. And by the way, the target here is not just to the Jewish audience, because right. Last year, I would say a third to 40% of the viewership were non-Jews, and we hope that mm-hmm. that even increases this year.
One of the things that really impressed me when I looked at the programming was just how diverse – I mean, there's nine films, but it's a diverse nine films. I mean, you've got films about heritage. You've got narrative dramas. You've got documentary. You've got a film that's good for younger – you know, for a family-friendly film. You've got one that's a little bit lighter. There's something good. It's neat. I mean, it's nice to have that kind of diversity in one program.
There is something for everyone.
Which I think is pretty incredible. Can you talk to me a little bit about what got you started with the festival, how you started it, why you started it?
Sure. First of all, I've been a film lover for a long time. But more than myself, my sister is was for 50 years a member of the Hollywood Film Society in Los Angeles and would see anywhere from 8 to 10 films a day. She now lives in Charlotte, North Carolina. Maybe she only sees 5 a week. So we review films together, you know, what she likes and what we don't like. I looked around a couple, 3 years ago and saw that there were 60 Jewish film festivals around the country. but Indianapolis didn't have one. So I got together a committee of about 20 people, and we decided let's try it. Mm-hmm. So we did, and David Shank was our public relations guru then, and it still is. And he did a great job in helping promote the films. I also need to pay homage to Nuvo. Nuvo did a great job with their inserts. We had like 4,000 inserts that we spread around town. So it just worked. We had great reviews of the festival. The gala last year was something entirely different than the one this year. It worked extremely well, and I have no doubts that the gala and the rest of the films this year will receive very good recognition. I think, you know, it might be a good idea to go back to Casper for a second. I understand we have a trailer.
We do?
Maybe
we ought to flip that on. And
this is exciting because it is a Hoosier or a Hoosier native, Galen Ross, who came back a couple years ago at the Heartland Film Festival and is now back again. And so let's listen to this trailer from Killing Kastner.
In my mind, what should be done about this situation? Kill the bastard. Clear the holy land from this atrocity.
He saved the most Jews in the whole Holocaust.
My father, he gets murdered over and over again.
He had been dealing with Eichmann, he had been coming, going in and out of the Gestapo headquarters, dealing with his equals in the name of nobody. I raised my hand with the gun.
He shot him once and twice, and he got him only on the third shot in the back when he was trying to get away. He's the one. I'm trying to understand what brought you, a young Israeli who had nothing to do with the Holocaust, to decide to kill my father.
That sounds incredible. I'm looking forward to seeing that. That's, you know, I had the chance to correspond for a little while with Ms. Ross with the last film that she brought in here, and she just brings an energy and an enthusiasm. So I am glad that she's going to be able to make it into town.
It should be quite exciting. I think she'll do a great job presenting this new film.
I want to make sure people know how they can follow up. Okay, first of all, so if people want to attend, if they want to, can they get advance tickets?
Absolutely. All they have to do is to either Google Indianapolis Jewish Film Festival or go to the website IndianapolisJewishFestival.com. It'll have the entire film lineup, the venues, the times, and it'll say if you want to buy a ticket, you just check and fill in the information so you can get advance tickets, or you can come to the door. We will accept either cash or credit cards.
Awesome. April 23rd to May 3rd, all right. Around town, IndianapolisJewishFilmFestival.com.
Yes, except for the first film, which is free to the public. Golda is without charge.
The whole 3 hours?
The whole 3 hours, right.
You don't like, have a big charge at the end?
No, we don't even accept contributions on that one. You just come as you are, and it's a great movie. Ingrid is spectacular as Golda Meir.
And it's I have actually seen the film, and it's a great film. So, you know, and it would be great to see it in a setting with people. So, anyway, and I did want to just correct, it is IndianapolisJewishFilmFestival.com.
Yes, correct.
So,
I should know that.
That's all right. I have the press release right in front of me. Right. So, go ahead and get your tickets for that. It is a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
That is correct.
So you can also support the organization year-round.
That is correct. And actually, there is, through the Arts Council, you can make a contribution to what's called Power to Give, mm-hmm. which is we're listed there so that you could designate this particular organization, and that would be a deduction. The money would come to us through them.
Fantastic. So film lovers, be aware. There is a major new film festival in town. This is your second year. We're excited. We want you to grow. So I look forward to seeing you at the festival.
Well, Richard, we certainly hope you come, and Sam and Kobe, all three of you. Just call us, and we'll get you some tickets.
Awesome.
Thank you.
All right. Now, we want to close off on kind of a sad note because it's Holy Week, and that's what we do.
Close out on sad note?
Exactly. No, I'm only kidding. I'm just, well, it is kind of sad. You know, we have a dead people we love.
As Matt says, we'll raise a glass to
Robert Zadar. Do you know Robert Zadar?
A little bit. I have.
You're a
seen...
horror freak, Sam. You have to know Robert Zadar.
Well, I have seen Maniac Cop.
I know you're only like 13, but come on.
I have seen Maniac Cop, and you know, his very unfortunate death. Bring me to see more of his work. So, and it seems like it's in that kind of pulpy B movie grindhouse kind of vein that I enjoy. So, I look forward to seeing more of his films.
He was a guy who was known. He was kind of your typical bad guy. Hmm. I mean, he looked like a bad guy. Hmm. He had this large face. In fact, he played the role of Face in the film Tango and Cash.
Ah.
Which, you know, was a playoff on his look. He had this kind of this, you know, big jaw. He just really looked like a guy who if you were walking down a dark alley, you would probably switch to the other side. You know, and yet, you know, as is so often the case, you know, I have several of my Facebook friends, because I am the independent critic, I deal with a lot of independent filmmakers, and I have a lot of my friends who knew him, and who just said he was one of the nicest, most giving people around. Hmm. And you know, it's tragic. I found out some interesting things about him. Prior to acting, he was a singer, keyboardist, guitar player for a Chicago-based rock band called Nova Express.
Hmm.
They performed as an opening act for groups like Jefferson Airplane, The Who. He used to be a jingle writer for an ad agency. He should have worked for Shank. I don't know. I think you missed out, quite honestly.
Well, he missed out on that.
So he did that for a while. He was actually a Chippendale dancer.
Oh, wow.
For a brief period, yes. Which
Renaissance.
I regret that I have never done. Hmm. I've always wanted to be a Chippendale dancer. Unfortunately, I'd be like Chip or Dale.
Yeah.
Not...
Was he related to Bela Lugosi? That goes back a few years.
That goes back a few. I'm impressed. Let's see. What else did he do? Among Zadar's other memorable roles, he was a prison guard in the enjoyably sleazy Hellhole. He was a crazed prostitute murdering serial killer in The Night Stalker, which was actually the part that led to him being cast as Matt Cordell, Maniac Cop. He beat up Sylvester Stallone in Tango and Cash. He was the Angel of Death in Soul Taker. He was in a film called The Divine Enforcer. He has over 100 movie credits on IMDb.
Wow.
He worked steadily from the 80s on. and you know, he passed away last week at the age of 64 from a cardiac arrest. He was a regular in horror film conventions. Again, I think probably that accessible, friendly personality was just I definitely think it's a big loss for the indie film community because he was working up until his death. I mean, he had, I think, three films out this year and one or two that are still slated to come out in the next year. And I don't know if they'll do a Paul Walker routine for him or not. You know, where they build an independent film. That would be kind of cool, though.
Yeah.
He could be the body in Weekend at Bernie's 3.
Weekend at Bernie's 3, we're still there.
I have no idea why I suddenly thought of that, Kobe.
I don't think that film needs to be made.
You don't?
No one's asking for that.
I mean, you know, you could question whether the first two really needed to exist. But
that's tragic, dude. I don't know. I think I'm understanding now why it's been a couple of years since you've been on the show.
Well,
you know, I'm only kidding.
This is why we invite Joe and Chris. Speaking of, what is going on at the film yet? Don't pull a Joe Shear and say, well, a little of this and a little of that.
Oh, no, I won't. Well, you know, you can check out my review of Wild Card if that's of any interest whatsoever. I actually have more going on at Nouveau News Weekly. You can go to nouveau.net and check out my Q&A with Jean-Michel Cousteau regarding his work, such as Secret Ocean 3D. I also have a weekly column on nouveau.net called Indie Film Talk, in which I speak with local and visiting filmmakers. And, of course, the Film Yap, the filmyap.com. Yeah.
And if you're a local pet store wanting to get Sam a pet, I recommend an eel. You know, he wants to overcome this phobia.
Not really.
No.
No.
Have you ever eaten eel, Sam?
No, people seem to think that that would help me conquer the fear.
You would have conquered the eel.
Well, yes, that is a good point.
You need to go to China. It's a regular dish there.
I don't know. We'll see. I am getting closer to confronting this fear, which I never thought I would actually have to face until speaking with an ocean explorer. So,
even with your friends harassing you unmercifully about it.
Yeah, oh, they post pictures on my Facebook all the time. It's really
we love that
it.
You have been honest about your fear and
well,
that you're a good
you.
Sport about being taunted about it.
We're here to help, Sam.
Oh, you know, well, I appreciate it.
This is a very healing show, actually. Yeah. I can't tell you how much I wanted to find an eel and bring it.
Oh, I'm so glad you didn't.
What's going? Tell us about the Independent Critic, Rick.
Oh, the Independent Critic. Just a reminder that we are now also reviewing books and music. Mm-hmm. So if you're an independent artist looking for a book, music, or movie review, visit theindependentcritic.com, and I can hook you up for that. I thank everyone for being here this week.
We got some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Richard Probst, thank
Kobe
you.
Kobe Slagle.
Sam, plug your site.
Thefilmyap.com, nouveau.net.
There you go. Indianapolis Jewish Film Festival. Bob Epstein, thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
April 23rd through May 3rd, IndianapolisJewishFilmFestival.com. Listen to Film Sociology, a film talk show on WFYI HD2 The Point. And WFYI.org. We gone. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.